Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready?
Hell yeah! Yeah, right!
And welcome to this edition of Rebel Rise Live. We're currently waiting on David Johnson to join into the show right now. Coming in off of yesterday, the biggest topic so far, as far as in the world of recruiting, yesterday's headline of Jonathan Kongbo, the four-star defensive end out of Arizona Western, who initially signed with the Vols. There were some reports out yesterday that there through sources saying that Kongbo had signed a financial aid agreement and not his letter of intent. Michael, your thoughts on those sources as that story unfolded late last night. What are your thoughts on that?
It seems like a lot to do about nothing, in my opinion. It looks like he's going to be a Vol. Just reading what you're seeing on his Twitter, it's certainly interesting that he hasn't signed that yet, and it does leave a bit of a window open for Florida State, USC, or Ole Miss to try and pry him away. And it certainly shows a disconnect between possibly Jonathan and his father. But it does seem like a lot to do about nothing that he will be a Vol in the end. That's just sort of gotten prolonged, his recruitment has.
You know, I tend to agree with that, you know, I think in the end, you know, you're going to see Jonathan Kongbo end up as a volunteer. Whether, you know, he has signed his letter of intent yet or not, I think, you know, down the stretch, if that has not been, you know, made official yet, I think that's what you are going to see towards the end. And like you said, you know, there have been reports out there that there was, you know, some conflict of some sort between, you know, his father and him signing his letter of intent. And there was a lot of questions I noticed out there, you know, well, he's an adult, you know, does he need a parent's signature? And what we found out through sources is that, in fact, until you are the age of 21, you still have to have a parent or guardian signature on your letter of intent. And, you know, though, but like I said, I, you know, and like what you said, Michael, I agree. However this gets settled, if it's not settled, in the end, I do believe he will be a volunteer. As far as other news out there, Ole Miss basketball has a midweek game coming up, going to Gainesville, Florida. Michael, you want to give us some insight on what to expect for the Rebels heading into that game?
Yeah, Ole Miss travels to Gainesville to try and get a series of revenge, Liam Neeson style, that the Gators were the first loss for Ole Miss in the Pavilion. They beat the Rebels by 9 back on January 16th. And, of course, as we all know, a Laramie Tunsil-less Ole Miss team was fell short to Will Greer and his robot body enhanced by science and the Florida Gators on the football field back in the fall. But the Gators have been, they would certainly be a quality win. They're a seventh seed right now in a lot of the bracketologies after a big win over number 9 West Virginia, and that was a double digit victory. But they've been sort of up and down this year. They played number 1 at the time, Michigan State, tied on the road, only losing by 6. They played number 17, Miami, tied on the road. And they had also played Texas A&M tight on the road, but they're fresh off of getting thumped in Lexington, Kentucky, which is something Ole Miss has experienced this year as well. But Ole Miss is coming together, and as we learned yesterday, Sebastian Saiz has been cleared to play in this one, and that will be big for Ole Miss. And Marcanvis Hyman was thrown right into the mix early on when Sebastian went down, and he really had to grow up in a hurry. And it was trial by fire as he became the lone low post presence for Ole Miss. And Andy Kenny would try a lot of different guys to try and help Marcanvis down there, but it just wasn't working out. And Hyman was the only guy who could really give Ole Miss a lot down there. But now that he's developed, adding Sebastian Saiz, the second leading rebounder in the SEC, to that mix will help tenfold. And getting a win on the road in Gainesville would be huge for Ole Miss and to keep the momentum going.
And looking at the how the season has unfolded, Ole Miss has been plagued by injuries during the season. At one point, even against Mississippi State, I believe it was 3 out of the starting 5 that was missing in action against Mississippi State. You know, it looks as though the Rebels are getting, you know, their injury bug out of the way, and everybody is appearing to get back to their full health. What are the statuses of those current players, like Sebastian Saiz? He's coming off of an eye injury. Moody has been banged up at various points in the season. Give us an update on the injury report.
Well, right now, Sebastian, everything that Candy and Sebastian told us is just a time injury, that they weren't going to be able to rush him back, and it didn't look like he was poised for any setbacks. It was just going to be, you need to take time, have all the procedures, and let this heal. And it appears as though it's finally healing. And of course, there's going to be an adjustment for him getting that vision in the peripheral back, but Sebastian should be all speed, full to go. And then with Moody and his hamstring, the other night he said that he was about 70% against Vanderbilt with that hamstring, but he is learning to play with it, and it has not limited him too terribly much. But letting that get better, and he's still getting it treated in between games, and so Stefan should be feeling better by the day. And then, of course, Newby, you hate it for the guy, but this is a condition that he's had since high school, that it'll just pop up randomly. He had to miss some games his senior year of his high school season because he woke up one day and just couldn't see out of that eye. The eyelid was swollen, and it was swollen shut. And so now he's on some steroids and some other medications, some steroids that you get from the doctor, not from Jim over at Gold's Gym, that Will Greer tends to enjoy so much, along with his buddy Mark McGuire. But it appears that the three of them are really getting it together and are really healthy. And this may be the healthiest that the Rebs have been in probably 2 months, because they also have, of course, Dante Fitzpatrick Dorsey, who's eligible now, and Terrence Davis, and they have a lot of guys out on the floor that are healthy, and they're getting deeper as the year goes on by giving some minutes to a guy like a Terry Brutus or a guy like Jake Coddington. And so now they're able to go a lot deeper than they were back in, say, the non-conference.
You know, we brought it up yesterday, and it seems like each year, Andy Kennedy, he he develops the talent and somehow finds a way. The season could start off rough and then somehow finds a way at mid-season, heading into the postseason. He finds a way to get the team onto that bubble, into the postseason, and, you know, getting the Rebels to the NCAA tournament or the NIT, wherever that the case may be. Right now, as it's looking, the Rebels aren't so much on that bubble, and we brought it up yesterday. Kind of go over that again. What is it going to take for Ole Miss from where they sit now, finishing the regular season, heading into the SEC tournament? What do they need to do to get in that conversation?
Yeah, Ole Miss has a couple more opportunities on their schedule for quality wins, and it looks like they're both going to come on the road at Florida tonight, and then, of course, you have at Texas A&M next week. And the leash is really short for Ole Miss. If they can get some wins in the SEC tournament over, say, Kentucky or an LSU or Florida A&M, someone near the top who will be a tournament team and they can point to on their resume, that would really help them because right now they don't really have a signature win. Right now their signature win may be over Vanderbilt, or if they could beat a South Carolina. But the rest of the schedule sets up really well. I mean, a home date with Arkansas. Arkansas is certainly not the team that we've grown accustomed to seeing from them. They lost a lot of bodies in the offseason, both to the draft and to the legal system. And then a road game at Auburn, and Ole Miss has won 6 straight against Auburn. So they like where they stand with that. And then a home date with Missouri, who's at the bottom of the conference, playing at Georgia. Georgia's played Ole Miss well in recent years, but, of course, the Rebels beat the Dogs by 1 earlier in the season. And then a home date with Mississippi State and then at Tennessee. So every single game is incredibly winnable. In fact, Ole Miss should be favored in most of the games remaining on their schedule. And if they can get a win at number 15 Texas A&M or at Florida tonight, that would really help their cause and could really sort of elevate them to that bubble. Because right now at 15-8, and we have 8 games to go, if Ole Miss can get to that 21 or 22 win range going into the SEC tournament, it will be hard for the NCAA tournament committee to say no. Because, like I said yesterday, the bubble's really soft, and when the bubble's as soft as it is, then you look for the hottest team. And if you can piece together those wins down a stretch, and Ole Miss has already done a nice job of getting that big win against Vanderbilt. And I can tell you I've been with Andy and with the players after these games and sort of taking the temperature of the room. And after that Vanderbilt game was sort of there's a different sort of vibe in the room. You could tell that something was happening, that the players were, that they were feeling it, that they were feeling that they turned a corner and that they are ready to make this late run. The seniors have done a great job, both in the locker room and on the floor. Guys like Newby, who's been at Ole Miss his entire career, and guys like Giello and Moody, who transferred in and have really taken those leadership roles. And they see the end of their college careers coming up, and they're not ready for it to end in Nashville or in the NIT. They want to take it to the dance one more time.
Ole Miss, that game tipping off tonight in Gainesville with an 8 o'clock p.m. Central time tip off, and then Ole Miss will have a game against Florida. They will return home Saturday with the 1 o'clock tip-off against Arkansas. Excuse me, returning home to face against Arkansas on Saturday with the 1 o'clock p.m. tip-off time. wanted to kind of go back and talk a little bit more about recruiting, and just wanted to cover a few things. I wanted to clarify one thing, one topic that we started off on the podcast, and this is coming from the Rebel Rise this morning. Of course, it broke last night that the nation's number one 2016 JUCO prospect, Jonathan Combo, has not yet signed his letter of intent to Tennessee. Since that time, David had reported to multiple sources where confirming that Combo has verified through DM with the Clarion Ledger, and that what that means is he has not signed his letter of intent as of yet. And this means he is not bound to the Vols and other schools can continue to recruit him. He's only signed a financial aid agreement with Tennessee, and he is waiting on his father to sign his letter of intent. Another thing to look at towards the 2017 class, it was confirmed this morning that we're not expecting the Rebels to sign any more or any tight ends for the 2016 class. Ole Miss signed three tight ends to the 2016 class, that being four-star Laurel prospect Octavius Cooley, Jacob Mathis, four-star out of Tampa Bay, Florida, and then Gabe Angel, four-star prospect out of Cookeville, Tennessee. So the wide or the tight end corps is looking like it is starting to field that depth. Last season, Ole Miss had a few walk-ons who had to come in and contribute a lot, such as Matt Brown is one that comes to mind. Michael, what's your input on that tight end depth finally starting to unfold?
Yeah, it's sort of been a hodgepodge at the tight end position. That, of course, Evan Engram, he was a very lightly recruited prospect. I believe his only other Power 5 offer was Wake Forest coming out. And aside from that, I mean, Ole Miss did get the signature from Sammy Epps, who really caught fire after the Miss Al game and got an Auburn offer, and we all remember that his recruitment got a little wild toward the end. But then eventually he was dismissed from the team. And so then they got Willie Hibbler, who was committed for a long time from North Panola, who had a heck of a huddle tape. He had one play that I remember where he was jumping over guys and all that and got some folks excited. But, of course, he redshirted last year, and Ole Miss had to rely on, after Evan Engram, it was Matt Brown and Hunter Thurley, and I believe there was a transfer from Lamar who didn't see much action. His name's escaping me right now. But, Ole Miss is they're really bringing in that depth with a lot of guys that can catch the ball. Octavius Cooley, he can really go out there and make plays, a real long body. And he committed to Ole Miss, you know, the day after that Peach Bowl loss, and stuck with the Rebels firm till the end. And he can really go out and make plays. I know the coaches are incredibly excited about bringing him in. And then Gabe Angel is a guy that they recruited since he was a freshman in high school. Really wanted to bring in Angel, and there was some talk about him possibly moving to linebacker, but he's going to start at tight end, and he can certainly make plays there. And then, of course, you add in an Under Armour All-American at tight end, and Jacob Mathis, who, after talking to one of the coaches, he said that he reminds him of a carbon copy Evan Engram. And so they're bringing on a lot of guys that can catch the ball. And if you're a high school tight end prospect, particularly on the smaller side, that you like to create mismatches and go out and catch the ball going over the middle, then Ole Miss is an attractive place to be. And building that tight end depth where they now have five scholarship tight ends on the roster at the moment, and four of them are going to be redshirt freshmen and below. And that's that's going to be big for them, and finally putting together some depth at that position, because we remember they were trying to make a few guys do something that they weren't built to do, sort of like a Nick Parker type is not going to go out and catch too many first downs for you, but now they and it certainly couldn't hurt having a guy like Evan Engram, who for anyone that's met Evan knows that he's a very high character guy, a very good guy, and having him sort of mentoring those younger tight ends is certainly going to be a benefit. And like I said, the depth is really building there. And it's something that's happening everywhere for Hugh Freeze. When Hugh Freeze came in, I can't name you one position that had depth of a lot of talent, much less experience. And losing offensive linemen in the Houston Nutt era, I feel like I'm just berating Houston Nutt lately. But I'm sure not too many of our listeners are going to mind that. But
not at all.
I'm sure Jeremy Tinsel will be fine with it. But when you'd lose an offensive lineman in the Nutt era, you were sort of horrified of whoever was going to step in that spot, and that carried over into the Hugh Freeze era, just because there weren't a lot of upperclassmen offensive linemen on the roster. But now Ole Miss loses all five starters across the line, and there's not really that much concern in Rebel Nation about what they're replacing them with, because you have guys like that have played a ton, and guys like Sean Rawlings, Javon Patterson, Rod Taylor, Robert Conyers, you have a lot, Jordan Sims, a lot of guys stepping into these roles that have gotten a lot of significant snaps. And then same with Laquan Treadwell and Robert Condici. You see so many analysts are saying, oh, it's going to be a lot for Ole Miss to replace. Yes and no. I mean, I hate to quote Remember the Titans, if you don't replace a Gary Bertier, but you don't replace a Laquan Treadwell. But still, you can try and mask that with the absolute onslaught of talented receivers at on the Ole Miss roster. And then, of course, Breland Speaks. He may miss most of next season, because murder is typically frowned upon. And I'm convinced that he may murder someone on the field. He is so quick off the ball and so terrorizing that there's a good chance that he may pick up a quarterback and throw him to Kentucky. There's like a 90% chance of that happening at some point next year. But until then, he's going to provide some great depth over at the interior of the D-line. And so tight ends, it's really no different that, because the coaching staff has recruited really well and developed really well, that they're finally building that depth of next man up that you see in an elite program like in Alabama has. Alabama has no one on their roster that they go, oh, if this guy goes out, we can't win. That's what Ole Miss is trying to build, and I think that they're finally getting to that point where there's no one really on the roster that when they go out, it's, well, there goes our season.
Right, and one thing that Hugh Freeze has pointed out that will be a priority going into the 2017 class is mid-year priority for the defense, and particularly with the linebacker corps and the defensive line. David spoke with a guy to keep your eyes on going into this 2017 cycle, and that is Mississippi Gulf Coast Community College defensive end Isaiah Bugs. Bugs has he's not talked with the Ole Miss coaches yet, and this is as David reporting it, but he is hearing from his coaches that Ole Miss is showing a lot of interest. Bugs stands in at 6'5", 280 pounds, and Auburn, Oklahoma, LSU, Louisville, and Iowa State have already offered Bugs, and he's a prospect to definitely watch going in into this 2017 cycle. A couple of guys who, one in particular who signed in with the 2015 class is Razul Clemens out of North Carolina, who signed with the Rebels in that class in last year's class and was assigned in place into East Mississippi Community College. And his name has resurfaced. Rebels are back interested in him with Clemens, and he's definitely another one to keep a watch on for this upcoming class. You know, and I think it is a smart move for Freeze to really put, you know, the mid-year emphasis on the defense, because if you sit back and look at it, Michael, the defense is there's going to be a lot of seniors going into this 2016 season. You look at Fadal Brown, Jonathan Young, or John Youngblood, and Isaiah Gross are three that come to my mind on the defensive front. So it's going to be very crucial for them to you know, start to stagger that depth back onto the defensive front, and then even at a linebacker position, which is even a concern for, you know, heading into this 2016 season.
Yeah, absolutely. They're definitely going to be hitting the ground running hard on that, the JUCO scene in the front seven, and like you said, they're going to be losing a lot of guys on that front, with guys like Isaac Gross and DJ Jones and Fadal Brown, and they're going to be losing a lot up there, and so they'll need to replace in a hurry and get guys on campus.
Right, and but before we sign off of this podcast, last thing we want to cover, you know, baseball season is just right around the corner. Michael, I know you gave us a update yesterday. Is there any upcoming things that you've got in store with baseball as far as getting some more intel report with the team?
The rotation is slowly piecing together. Of course, Brady Bramlett, that's someone that we've known ever since last year, that he wasn't going to, or that he was going to be the Friday starter for Ole Miss, and I learned the other night that Chad Smith, who is a reliever in junior college, and that's how he was drafted out of JUCO this past summer by the Cleveland Indians. He looks like he's going to be making his way into the rotation as well, which he has some filthy stuff. Some of his off speed sort of reminds me of RJ Hively, who some Rebel fans might remember, who's currently in the Diamondbacks system, I believe, and so they're slowly piecing that together. But every time I'm at practice, I'm really dumbfounded by how quickly everyone can get to the ball in the field. There's not one spot in the field where there's a deficiency on defense. And it's really an undervalued part of baseball. I mean, you're going to save a lot of runs with what Ole Miss has out there. You put a Tate Blackman, who is hitting the ball incredibly well in the spring and really had a good fall ball as well. You put him and Errol Robinson up the middle. They've had another year of chemistry together. And then you put a guy like Colby Bortles at third, who, for a big guy, he can really move and he can get to the ball pretty well. And then Will Golson, sort of not your typical first baseman sort of look, but he's athletic over there. He may remind you of a Doug Minkiewicz type, former Minnesota Twin and Florida State Seminole. And, of course, Fitzsimmons will provide depth over at first base in case Golson needs to move around. And then you look at the outfield, there's just so much speed. I can't stress this. This is something that you haven't seen since maybe the Jordan Henry days, and that still didn't hold a candle to just how fast this year's team is, with Woodman and Deshaun and Watson and Cloyd. And DJ Miller will come in late. I could definitely see him coming in late and being some fresh legs out in the outfield, because he moves his hips so well and tracks balls so well going to his left or to his right and can really cover a ton of ground out there. I think you're going to see Mike Bianco play around a lot with sort of the outfield formations we're used to seeing J.B. Woodman in center. And J.B. Woodman can move. He can absolutely move. You've seen him get down the line. You've seen him track down some balls. But he's probably he doesn't have what Kyle Watson has in terms of stretching out the outfield. And so you may see Watson play some in center. You'll still see Woodman play some there. But you could see Woodman find himself in left or right field. There's going to be a lot of moving pieces because there's a ton of versatility on this team. And it's certainly going to be a lot of fun to watch, I think. If you're sort of a casual baseball fan and you like to, you know, watch it with your eyes sort of shuttering closed after a few too many beers, but you enjoy the atmosphere of it, you're going to enjoy it because there's a lot of winning. And if you're a baseball lifer and a baseball purist like myself, you're really going to love this team because they can do a lot of exciting things on the field. They can hit the long balls, but on top of that, I mean, they're going to steal a lot of bases. There are going to be a lot of runners being put in motion in all sorts of counts and situations, and you're going to see some big innings. I suspect you'll see them go nine deep, a couple innings at the plate. So, yeah, it'll be a fun year, and we have our preseason press conference that's coming up, so that'll be fun. We'll get a lot of information in, and Coach Bianco will finally have everything solidified, and we'll get some words from some of the top players around the team, and that'll be fun. And I can't believe it. It's kicking up in a week and a half. Next Friday is when we start baseball season. So,
what is your what is your weather forecast prediction, Michael, for the opening weekend of baseball season at Swayze Field?
You know, I was actually I was looking up weather.com yesterday after, you know, going outside and realizing that it's Jack Frost temperature, and I walk outside and I'm just saying every cuss word I've ever learned in my life. I'm combining some, I'm making up some. I think I actually might have said some of the neighboring towns from Whoville, thinking that they were cuss words. I was just all over the place there, but I hate the cold, and it was just so freezing yesterday. And the fountain by my house was frozen solid. There was actually a frog in there in the water. I don't know if he drowned or if he finally had enough and he just offed himself. He said, "You know what? I hate the cold too. This is too much. Florida's too far away. I'm done." But either way, he's dead. But I looked up the forecast, and apparently we're going to be getting into consistent mid-60s weather starting this weekend and going into next weekend. And I just put both my hands in the air and started tapping my feet and screaming hallelujah. And I started yelling, "God is good all the time," because I am so happy about some warm weather coming. I've been doing a lot of work at the gym on my calves getting ready for this type of weather. So it's about to be showtime for my calves, and got a big shorts collection. So I'm definitely excited about all that.
I'm with you, brother. I'm a short weather guy. I've actually even kind of tempted it and tested out to see if I can bust out the shorts. You know, we did get up into the 70s a couple weekends back. But this morning, a little bit of snow flurries in there. Already get texts from the stepsoner. Are they going to let us out of school? They're going to let us out of school. Well, it's not too cold enough yet to stick over here. But, you know, mm-hmm. Baseball season right around the corner and it's snowing, guys. So I like your forecast prediction, Michael, because I'm ready for those mid-60s and lower 70 weather. And you know what? I'm actually kind of ready for the summer. You know, I've had enough of the cold. I'm ready to just be sweating right now out on a football field at a combine or something. You know, I'm, warm weather is definitely would be a delight right now. Well, that's going to do it for this edition of Rebel Rise Live. David, that was not able to join us on the show today, but Michael and I definitely secured the fort down for Dave Bevan and Michael Court with Rebels 247. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next time.